During a visit to Iceland a few years ago, he brought home a story about elves. Now, between 50 and 70% of Icelanders believe in them. Others will tell you they're not going to say they don't because things tend to go wrong with the environment when they say that. Which is why construction projects have been halted, roads rerouted around giant rocks in which elves are thought to live. Vermont-based medieval scholar and science writer Nancy Marie Brown is posing a provocative question. What if we all had the same attitude? What if more of us held the natural world and its possible inhabitants in awe? Could that help save the planet? And why don't we feel like Icelanders? Mankind used to. Her new, astonishingly in-depth book is Looking for the Hidden Folk, How Iceland's Elves Can Save the Earth. It's possibly the only time that quantum physics, the Protestant Reformation, elves, Icelandic sagas, and J.R.R. Tolkien are all explored in one book. You'll remember Tolkien's children's nanny was from Iceland. Her stories helped shape his epics The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Nancy Marie Brown joins us from Vermont. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Robin. It's wonderful to be here with you to talk about Iceland and elves.
Do you believe that they are tangible physical things?
I cannot see them, but I can feel that sense that I'm not alone. For me, it's the glaciers that are the most sentient. You do feel that there is eyes watching you. It's this being. All the time, you're being watched by these large earth giants watching you.
And it's understandable that there are people from ages ago who had no way of explaining this. And so it was a giant who was roaring in the distance.
Poor troll, yeah. You know, when you say elf, you know, people think of Tinkerbell and, you know, the Keebler elves and the Santa's elves, but that's not really what the traditional Icelandic elf is. The traditional elf is a quite large and powerful and magical embodiment of the forces of nature.
Well, in the revered Icelandic sagas, we learned that back in 977, Codran, father to Thorvald the Far Traveler, he believed that an elf lived in a huge rock on his land and protected his livestock. In 884, there was a hill that no one could look at until they washed themselves. It was that holy.
Telgafell, the holy mountain. We went to the farmyard and knocked on the door and we said, is this where Snorri Goði used to live in 884? And the farmer, he kind of waves to his son and he says, oh yes, this is the place. And they knew the story that there were people living inside this hill with the old gods and having a feast, and that sometimes you can see them and sometimes you can't.
So what happened to the rest of us? I mean, we know that here the indigenous people's reverence for the earth was pretty much wiped out by conquerors. But you say around the world, you tie it in part to the Protestant Reformation?
If you look at the pagan religions, the idea that there were spirits living in the land, if you were going to build something, if you were going to take water, you had to say thank you. You had to be careful that you didn't use too much, that you were living in balance with nature. This was found all over. And the Christian way of looking at the world was very different. God and the angels were in the sky. They were not in the rocks. So when you would take something that had been a holy mountain, either in Iceland or in Ireland, it could continue to have its holiness, but it was associated with a saint or a monastery. This saint didn't actually live in that place. And then when the Protestant Reformation came, we were told we were no longer allowed to worship anything in the earth at all. Church was the only place for this sense of the holy, but not in the rocks. They were no longer sacred. We don't often think that the rocks themselves are worth protecting. And I think that's where the Icelanders, they want to protect rocks.
And then at one point we're into literature and writing and Nabokov and C.S. Lewis and, of course, Tolkien. And a split that grew between realism and what were then called fairy stories.
Well, it's really interesting that when the concept of the modern novel came in, that the idea that what we're supposed to be writing about is real people doing real things, that was a very new idea. Before that time, in the 1700s, almost every story had some supernatural part to it. You go back to Homer and the Odyssey, dragons or a story that has elves or trolls, getting rid of the enchantment, This was a very Protestant work ethic sort of way of looking at literature. Tolkien was one of the people that fought back against this idea. He would be very happy to realize that his way of looking at literature has now become dominant. We have all the elves and the trolls from Icelandic saga coming to us through Tolkien.
Well, you also dive deep into science, how the eyeball works. Now, we alluded to this earlier, studies that show people can't see things they don't expect, like a giant toothbrush in a picture on a street scene. People just don't see it. Then we're off to Newton's discovery of gravity, Einstein's general theory of relativity.
And then we got into quantum physics and ideas that scientists have now about dark matter actually making up most of the universe. So most of the universe is made up of something that we cannot detect. We can't see it, we can't hear it, but you need to have it or the theories don't work. So, of course, my mind is making all these connections. What's the difference between dark matter and an elf? So, you know, how does our eyesight actually work? And what I learned was that we don't really know. Neurophysicists are saying that you actually make up most of the world based on your memories, what you've seen before, what you expect to be there, what you've been taught. And so if you're growing up in the Middle Ages and you are taught that there's these big scary things called trolls out there in the mountains, and you are going through a snowstorm and you see some, you know, strange dark something over there on the mountain, you don't think it's a tornado, you think it's a troll. And I think, you know, what have I grown up with? Well, everything in nature can be explained. Everything can be tamed, even if we haven't done it yet. And that's not the way Icelanders look at the world. They look at the world as being mysterious.
You take us back to Alexander von Humboldt, who was credited in the early 1800s with inventing nature. This idea that going out into nature, not just to work and cut down a tree, was something that was good for humans. Look, you don't have to believe in elves. But if you pull from that, that you're going to care about a place where an elf might live, you've changed something from just a space to a place.
That's right. I've been seeing these stories about how you should learn to take an awe walk, paying attention to little magical everyday things. For me, that's what these stories about elves in Iceland have been doing for centuries. It's been telling us to pay attention, to see the holiness in rocks and hills and moss. I wanted to start a conversation about how we find value in nature and how the words that we use, the stories we tell about nature, really shape what we see. Those beliefs are going to help us preserve it or maybe continue to destroy it.
You quote a philosopher who uses Iceland's rocks to talk about environmental ethics. Mm-hmm. And he talks about a student in rural Iceland, on a sheep farm, trying to explain to him the ethical, spiritual outlook of her country. And she came up with, in Iceland, we're taught not to smash rocks.
Exactly. She's talking about these black asphalt, you know, it looks like a broken up asphalt parking lot. And you don't smash that.
No.
Appreciate it.
They have a sense of humor, but what they're really talking about is the holiness and the spirit that lives in the earth. It's not tiny little people that we can make fun of.
I wonder if you could just talk about one other thing, mentioning Tolkien, a realization you came to, that when you go with children, like into the woods, children see doors. You know, they're walking between two trees and they're walking into a whole new world. They see doors that we don't see anymore. Also, this phrase that came from Tolkien, cleaning our windows.
Both of them are seeing in a new way. You go out for a walk and you're talking to somebody on the phone. You're doing your 10,000 steps. You're not really present. He actually says that's why you read fantasy, is to actually put yourself in a different world so that when you come back to your own world, you say, this is amazing too. This is magical also.
Nancy Marie Brown, her book is Looking for the Hidden Folk, How Iceland's Elves Can Save the Earth. Nancy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. It was great talking to you.